Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
On Friday, October the 24th, the Norris Group proudly presented its seventh annual award-winning black tie event, I Survived Real Estate. An incredible lineup of industry experts joined Bruce Norris to discuss perplexing industry trends, head-scratching legislation, and opportunities emerging for real estate professionals. Proceeds for the event benefited Make-A-Wish and St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital. This event could not have been possible without the generous help of the following platinum partners: Auction.com, Housing Wire, Property Radar, the Apartment Owners Association, the San Diego Creative Real Estate Investors Association, and President Bill Tan, the North San Diego Real Estate Investors Association, Invest Club for Women and Iris Veneration, Wholesale Capital Corp, New Western Acquisition, MVT Productions, and White House Catering. For event video and information, visit isurvivedrealestate.com.
I'm going to tell you a story because I think it's important to... It's interesting how some days you can literally start with the worst business day of your life. A few months ago, I got a phone call out of the blue. Somebody said, Bruce, I was the listing agent of a house that you sold to my investor about 10 months ago. He said, were you aware that there was a violent death on the property? And I said, no. He said, well, the gentleman that bought it has, you know, been told and confirmed that, in fact, that had happened. I said, no, I didn't know that. And so I had been flipped the property by somebody else, and I called him up, and I said, were you aware of that? And he said, yes. And he said, and I disclosed it to you in writing, and my heart sunk. It was the worst minute of my business life, because now my first thought was, there's a gentleman that's living in this house that wishes he didn't own it and living in a circumstance that he's bothered by. There's a real estate agent that's a listing agent, a sales agent in harm's way because I didn't notice a disclosure that I should have read, and I was sick about it. First thing I did is I went out and I started my car and I drove to the house. And very fortunately, Gustavo Ortiz was there. I got out of my car, I walked up to him, and I said, my name is Bruce Norris. And he said, that sounds familiar. I said, I'm the guy that bought the house that sold it to the guy that fixed it and sold it to you. And I just wanted to look you in the eye, man to man, and tell you that I did not know that there had been a violent death, or I would have told you, but it was disclosed to me. And I want you to know that the other realtors that followed in this transaction had no idea that that was true. So this is my complete responsibility. He looked at me completely amazed. He says, honestly, I never thought I would ever see anybody do that. He says, come on in, we'll talk. So I sat down with him and he said, what bothered me most was that the gentleman that lived here before me was in the military, and he just had a lot of trouble with what went on, and he ultimately killed himself. And he said, I'm going through the same stuff. And he says, and now he's got my emotion. He sees me react, and it's real. And I get up and I hug him. I said, I'm so sorry. And he excuses himself for a minute. And, we sat down and I said, please let me buy the house from you. I'll just pay off your VA loan and you can find another place. And he said, you would do that for me? I said, absolutely. It's the only right thing I can think of to do. And he cried. He said, excuse me. And he got up and I thought he was going to go up and compose himself, but he comes back, sits down with me. And he has two medals in his hand, and he tells me the story of the medals. And at the end of that, he says, because of your bravery, I want you to have one. And so It was the most amazing day that I've ever had as a person in real estate. The next day, I get this email from him, and it said, "Good morning, Bruce. My mornings used to be filled with depression and worry about my future. Today begins a new day for me, filled with hope and ambition for my future. Your courage changed my life. God bless you." 2 minutes later, I got an email from Gustavo's sister, and it said this. He said, "Mr. Norris, my brother Gustavo told me of your meeting yesterday. All I can say is a big heartfelt thank you. I think you may have just saved his life." There's going to be a day that you sit across from a Gustavo Ortiz, have the guts to do what's right, and you may end up with the most amazing story of your career. Okay? As you can tell, that was touching, and it still touches me. In 1981, I had a very unique experience attending my first Jim Rohn seminar. I didn't want to go to the seminar, never been to a seminar. They told me it was 3 hours long. I calculated that was six sermons. I didn't know how I was going to make it. And in a three-hour time period, Jim Rohn managed to turn my entire life upside down. I set a series of goals for the first time in my life. Little did I know that in that audience was a gentleman named Jack Fullerton that was affected in a very similar way. And tonight we're going to talk about Jack Fullerton a little bit, because he's going to receive an award that we got permission from the Jim Rohn Foundation to give, called a Rohne Award. I interviewed Jack, and I've known him for a long time. He was an entrepreneur when he was 8 years old. He went around and took in trash cans in his neighborhood. He got the account, did the work, collected the bill, invested the money, opened the savings account. Some of those habits apparently went and fed his ambition to be an Eagle Scout, which he became. By his own admission, he wasn't a great swimmer, but he became an All-American swimmer anyway. He coached All-American teams. During that stretch of being a coach, he was working about 70 hours a week as a teacher and a coach. He got introduced to the world of real estate investing. And even though he had very little time, he managed to work on the side. And he and Mary decided that they would create wealth by being frugal for a five-year plan. And so that's what they set out to do, and they did that. He started an investment club called the Commonwealth, and I attended one of those meetings in 1986. The first thing that I heard him say in front of an audience was that anybody that says they can buy properties below market enough to resell them immediately in California is not telling the truth. And I thought, well, he'll probably be happy to know that that's not true, that it can be done. So I waited all the way till the end. And if you're a speaker, the last person is always the problem. I just want to walk you to my car. That's wonderful. I didn't know how to get there myself. Thank you. I didn't say that to him, but I was last, and I waited, and I think he was wary. And I told him, and I thought he would be excited to know this. I said, "Just so you know, I do that in Riverside. I buy and resell right away and make a living." In the parking lot was a problem. It was a brand new 86 420 SEL, and it wasn't Jack Fullerton's. It was mine. Now, he could have owned 20 of those, but he was smart enough not to own one, and I wasn't. He wrote me off kind of quickly, and I thought, well, that's... So I took a bunch of pictures of properties I had done, and I sent them. And like Jack Fullerton would do, he researched them, and he called me back after a couple of months. He says, "You know what? I'd like to talk with you." And in that meeting, we found out that we had a mutual mentor named Jim Rohn. And he asked me to speak to his club. And that was not my intention. Speak to your club. I hadn't spoken in front of an audience about real estate. I decided I would do it. He offered you to have a dinner with him. I didn't eat. I had a little piece of something. He looked at me. He says, "Is this a big deal to you?" I said, "Well, yeah, it's the first time I've ever spoken in front of an audience about real estate." Oh. I guess it went okay, because in that audience there was an A.D. Kessler. A.D. Kessler said, "You know your stuff. You want to write for my magazine," which I did. And all of a sudden, got another speaking engagement. And I took it, and I didn't really think that there might be a difference in clubs. And I went to go speak at that club, and the owner didn't show up. And I had to speak. Finally, I just got up and said, "You know what? The guy's not here. I'm just going to go ahead and teach." And as I got done with my talk, he showed up, and the whole audience turned aggressive and said, "Where's our money? You cheat." Oh, my goodness. It was terrible. I thought, oh, my gosh, what am I doing here? So I called Mr. Kessler up and told him the experience. He said, "Bruce, before you speak in front of another group," he said, you have to let me know." I said, "Well, I thought it would be just like the other experience." And he said something that turned out to be very true. He said, "Bruce, you're going to find out there's very few Jack Fullertons." There's something that Jack Fullerton has always impressed me with. And it was really very similar to the note that I took that very first night being in front of Jim Rohn speaking. The first note that I wrote on top of my page was to my brother, said he doesn't need anything from us. And that was important to me because I'm very sensitive to agendas. And Jack Fullerton doesn't have an agenda. When he had a club for 30 years and you went there and you heard a speaker there, that speaker had earned the right to stand there. And it wasn't about selling you anything. It was about education. And there was a filter system that people went through. And when you were a speaker, you respected that when you spoke in front of their club, you had an audience that was really substantial because they knew what to expect. It was education. He always continued to learn himself. And what was neat about that is he brought mentors to California that may never have shown up here without his help, because the Jack Millers and the Schaubs and so forth of the world, we may not have known except for those who are the people that taught him. And he never stopped teaching himself. He's had a permanent impact on many people's lives. And he's began the speaking career of myself and one Ward Hannigan, who also spoke for the first time in Jack Miller's club. I'm sorry, Jack Fullerton's club. So it's really with a great deal of honor that we present you tonight with a Lifetime Achievement Award, the first Roney Award ever. And Jack Fullerton, you deserve it, and Aaron is has it with you right there.
Jack, we on the website have some testimonials from some of your friends. The Rona state sort of came a little bit late, and we weren't sure if you were going to be able to attend, so this literally fell together thanks to Bill Tan and a few other people very last minute. So if any of you have some really great stories and some testimonials about Jack, I'll be collecting those and passing them on. And if you go to isurvivedrealestate.com, you can see some of those testimonial videos up for you. All right? Thanks, Jack.
Okay, our first two panelists we're going to bring up they're economists. Love to get the big picture of how they see things. Christopher Thornburg is an expert in the study of regional economies, real estate dynamics, labor markets, and business forecasting. He's been involved in a number of special studies measuring the impact of important events on the economy, including the NAFTA treaty, California power crisis, port security, and the September 11th terrorist attacks. Prior to launching Beacon, he worked with UCLA Anderson Forecast, where he regularly authored the outlooks for California. Was certainly one of the first economists to say in advance that the real estate market was in trouble. And he's one of my favorite guests because I know I can ask him stuff that I don't know the answer to, and he's good with it. And so that makes it a safe interview. So Christopher, please come on up. Anywhere you want would be fine. Doug Duncan is Fannie Mae's vice president and chief economist. He's responsible for managing Fannie Mae's strategy division and economics and mortgage market analysis groups. Prior to joining Fannie Mae, Doug was senior vice president and chief economist at the Mortgage Bankers Association, recently named one of the country's top four most accurate economists in 2010 by the Wall Street Journal, and named one of Bloomberg's Businessweek's 50 most powerful people in real estate. Doug is a frequent speaker on national and state economics, housing, and mortgage market conditions. And I enjoy interviewing Doug. And one of the things that I noticed is that sometimes when you talk, when you interview somebody from Fannie Mae or FHA, there's a filter where you actually have to submit questions, and that's never been the case with Doug. So he must have a get-out-of-jail-free card for some of that. But Doug, welcome to our panel. I guess the first thing I'd like to ask, and each of you take a turn, is where do you see the national economy as far as GDP growth in, say, 2015, and how will that affect real estate?
I'm happy to start. I want to point out, by the way, we've known each other how many years now?
Well, quite a long time.
Quite a long. I think that bio was from the first year I met you. I think you need to update that just a little bit.
You've done other stuff?
Yeah, just a little bit.
Okay.
Anyway, moving
on. I'm glad to know the gloves are off, though. Thank you.
Well, no, I mean, really? Like, right? I mean, I've done a few things since then. I swear to God, I have. Anyway. Economy, economic growth. Look, the economy's, a couple of years ago, we were the black hole in the global economy. Today, we're the shining star. Yeah, we had a rough first part of the year, the first quarter, big negative. Since then, the machine's running on all cylinders. You got consumer spending moving forward nicely, and it's going to continue to improve. People are starting to borrow. Consumer credit is expanding. You have a situation where the labor market's continuing to improve. And indeed, right now, just over the last 3 months, the job openings rate got to pre-recession levels. High-skill workers are starting to hear words like signing bonus, things like that. So that is going to start contributing to things. Businesses are investing well. Durable goods orders continue to tick up. Industrial production at an all-time high level. Even government spending, which has been a huge drag in the economy, finally starting to bottom out. Largely because the number of state governments started falling, get back into the game of investing again in local economies. The only weak part of the economy I can see right now continues to be the global markets, the export front. There, of course, the dollar's been coming up a bit. We know there's global issues. But putting that to one side, here domestically, the U.S. economy is doing great. And candidly, we're going to look to average probably over about 3% growth this year, all said and done. Next year, 3.5%, maybe even more. So good things all across the board.
Okay. Doug?
As you know, I come from a farm background, so I had been saying that the U.S. economy was the best-looking horse in the glue factory. So I've stopped using that. I pretty much agree. I think we have a little more conservative view of what will happen in 2015. We're not sure that we'll get 3% growth next year, but certainly the last three quarters
we
of this
will.
Year are very strong.
You have his word on it that it's okay. You can now pass that on.
Yeah.
If things are so hot, how come we have a 2.2% 10-year T-bill? Does that...
Your cause and effect, that was a complete disassociation moment for me. I'm like, why? What does that have to do with anything?
Well, that's why you're here.
Well, look.
To explain stuff to me.
Excuse me. First of all, interest rates are not set locally. They're set internationally, right?
Okay.
So when you start talking about interest rates, it's really a global phenomenon. We live in a world today which is awash with capital, and candidly doesn't have a lot of demand for it, both short run and long run. Short run, obviously, we have a lot of central banks that are very loose right now. We have a lot of economies, Europe specifically, which is still struggling to get out of the recession they're in. Go to the other side of the equation. You think about the long-term stuff. Information technology, which means you can invest less and less nominal money and get more and more real return, which means that overall demand for nominal capital is down. And then China. And China, which is, growing 7.5%, even now with their slowed down pace, 7.5%. Second largest economy in the world, a wealth-producing machine. An economy that has, get ready for it, a 42% savings rate. Let me repeat that. A 42% savings rate.
This globe is
awash with capital. $2 billion in the Waldorf Astoria. Look at the hunks of land they're buying in downtown L.A. That's the formal stuff. Look at the homes they're purchasing. Look at the EB-5 programs, which maxed out for the first time ever last August because of Chinese money.
Let's talk about that because it's interesting because I don't know that that's healthy. I understand the result is good, but we had somebody in our group very familiar with what happened to prices in Beijing. They bought a house for $50,000. $50,000 and $100,000, owned three houses, sold them for $500,000, $500,000, and $2 million, and brought that money. Yes, that's the return. And they brought that money probably with the expectation that that would continue somewhere. Okay. Well, but that's the
They brought that money here, you mean?
Yes.
But they didn't bring it here for that? No. I've seen the exact opposite from my perspective, from the EB-5 program.
Okay. Well,
they're bringing their money here because they know they can keep their money.
Well,
that's not. It's not about returns. It's about safety.
Okay. I spoke in front of 400 or 500. And I know you've done the same thing, but I was spoken in front of 400 or 500 Chinese investors in Northern California, and the Q&A session was very interesting. One of the gentlemen says, "You know, I bought a house in San Jose 2 years ago for $1 million. It's worth $2 million, and I'm going to hold it till it's worth $7 million." And I didn't have a context for that until I realized he was from Beijing. And so now you're confident their figures are accurate at 7%, and you're not concerned about them having a real estate bubble?
Listen, we know that they have a bubble per se, but keep in mind a couple of things. First of all, they didn't leverage up to the nth degree that we have. Household debt's still relatively affordable, and of course they didn't have a financial system that leveraged up on the leverage with all sorts of shoddy nonsense going on.
Okay.
They don't have the secondary influence of things. And keep in mind, the biggest problem in China is not prices. Prices relative to incomes are actually still pretty good, to be perfectly honest with you. The problem is they have empty buildings. And the empty buildings are because they had so much investment money that had to find some place called home that they were building all those empty buildings. Well, now they're tired of building empty buildings, and now they wouldn't want to buy stuff here. And that's why the economy there is slowing down a bit, because that money's flowing out. But that goes back to my point. Interest rates are low because that is the fundamental investments position we're in right now. And, you know, candidly, everybody in the U.S. better get used to it, because until the Chinese start consuming rather than saving, this is going to be a permanent feature of our economy.
Okay. Just one more point on Beijing. Beijing's median price is 20 times their gross income.
I don't think that's true.
It is true. Okay. So we had a bubble at 60 grand times 10 or 600, and they have twice that.
Yeah, but first of all, Bruce, with all due respect.
Go right ahead.
Nobody has good data on China.
But you're okay
Nobody
with 7% GDP growth?
And the little bit of data I've seen have actually showed the opposite. For people who are in a position to buy a home, because you can't compare that number to the legions of people who may not even have an apartment to live in. We got to compare it to the realm of people who actually have a chance to own homes. The numbers I've seen from both a big study that was done by the Wells Fargo, as well as another big study that was done by The Economist, don't show that particular statistic. Quite the opposite. They show homes still getting more expensive, but never to the point of unaffordability the way we had it here in the U.S. So, but we can't debate this because neither you or nor I are qualified to talk about these numbers. No, we're not. It's a black box. Do you think you understand Chinese statistics?
Well, I heard that 84% of all statistics are made up.
There you go. Thank you. Well spoken.
Yeah, that was good. I like that.
The Norris Group would like to thank its gold sponsors for supporting I Survived Real Estate, Adrenaline Athletics, Coachella Valley Real Estate Investors Association, Caldwell Banker Town & Country, Costa Mesa Marriott, Council of Multiple Listing Services, Elite Auctions, In A Day Development, Inland Valley Association of Realtors, Investor Experts, IRA Services Trust Company, Jennifer Buys Houses, Keystone CPA, Las Brisas Escrow, LA South REIA, The Avis Tax Wealth Management, Personal Real Estate Magazine, Pilot Limousine, Primary Residential Mortgage, Northern California Real Estate Investors Association, Real Wealth Network, Realty 411 Magazine, Rick and Leanne Rossiter, Sunoco Corporation, South Point Companies, Spinnaker Loans, Tony Alvarez, UDirect IRA Services, Resident Lens Photography, and SJREI. See iSurvivedRealEstate.com for a video of the live event and more information.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.